All right, we on?
Yeah.
Hey, we lit. What up, though?
I'm
doing pretty good. I can't complain. So we on and we live. So if you guys just tuning in, welcome back to Match Matt here on Anchor. You can also find me on SoundCloud and iTunes. I'm your homie. I'm your plug. You know I got extra love. And this is what I'm here for. And it's a new year. So, you know, it's 2018. Like, we survived the first, like, full year of Donald J. Trump in the office of President of the United States of America. And I didn't think I'd make it. I'm going to be honest.
I was worried.
I was very, very worried. I was like, you know what? A lot of stuff is going on. I'm not going to make it. I might have to just, like, you know, hop on a boat, you know, then get on a train and go to another country, like, learn a new language, get a new family, you know, and change my life and use my English to make myself, you know, more powerful. And I just have to give up on this place. I just have to, like, disappear and give up on this place. There's no way. Like, but how's your new year, though?
It was good. I actually ended up going to, I don't know, well, I'm assuming everybody's heard about it, but the Jerk and Jollof party at St. Andrews. It's like a African and Caribbean New Year's celebration. And I have to say, I was very surprised at how much fun it was for, you know, a Caribbean New Year's celebration. But I guess the name should let you know that it's going to be lit. But
oh, yeah, it's for sure going to be lit.
Really, really fun. Now, I did figure out a couple things about myself. One, I can't dance. I can't. You know, and this whole time, I've been living my life, doing just fine, thinking that, you know, I was getting it. And it was a very sad revelation that I, in fact, cannot dance. So there were a couple other things that I figured out. But that was the biggest thing going into 2018 that Jerk and Jollof has taught me. Watch yourself.
You know, that's my big fear, too. That's my big fear, too. It's like,
I had to come home and add that to my resolutions to just watch myself. But yeah, but it was fun. It was a nice way to bring in the New Year's, and I went and celebrated with, like, my sisters and some of their friends, and it was just nice to, like, not be doing something crazy for New Year's, but to bring it in with, like, good fun. But how was yours? What did you
do? Oh, it was actually pretty good. I went over a couple friends' houses, like, I was actually going to go to Jerk and Jollof, but I was like, man, I'm on the bougie. I can't afford all this. And I said, man, I'm sweating. Because if I was going to pay for it, I wanted to pay for the VIP. Because I'm like, if I'm going to go, I'm going to get fed. Like, I'm going to eat. Like, I'm going to eat like a king. But I was like, no, man. Like, and I had to pay for Uber, and I had to pay for drinks. And I was like, and I'm, you know, and I had to pay for my extracurricular activities. And I'm just like, oh, man, I can't. I'm like, I like, fiscally, I want to be more fiscally responsible in 2018.
Good for you. That's the right way to go. I was not thinking that. I was like, whatever. It's not the office with my mama, so I'm going
to
go.
That's true. I had I had something crazy yesterday. It was like this little drink from Canada, and it was this little green bottle, and they call it the Green Fairy. And they call it the Green Fairy because, like, if you take, like, a lot of it, you're, like, hallucinate. And it's alcohol. It's literally alcohol. What? And so, like, it smelled like black licorice, and it go down like a black jelly bean. Like, and it was the worst. Like, he told me that it would be just evil and corrupt. My friend's husband. Yeah, my friend's husband. So we were all drank some, and so we all did a shot together. And when I tell you, it was a shot. And when I tell you, that thing went down, like, if you could imagine drinking, like, Vicks Vapor Rub and, like, and Icy Hot at the same time. It was, like, slithering down. Like, it just crawled down my body. But, like, in about 5 minutes, it hit me. And I wasn't hallucinating, but I was for sure getting smacked. And I was like, what is going on and how powerful is this from just one? Like, I felt it for a second. granted, I drank a little Hennessy and a margarita before. But I was like, goodness gracious. Like, I didn't know what was going on. It was just like crawling down. And I just felt so uncomfortable. I felt violated. I was like, ew. Like, what is this?
What was the name of it again? What is it?
So it's called, like, a Just type in, they call it the Green Fairy, but I don't know the official name offhand. Matter of fact, I might be able to look it up right now. You know, look at technology. Look what Steve Jobs did, okay? Let
me find though, to the people out there, listen, we are not endorsing that you take this wild ride that he's talking about.
Hey, man, it's worth it. Have some fun. Live a little. Okay, the Green Fairy is called a... Absinthe. A-B-S-I-N-T-H-E. So absinthe. It's 100 proof.
Oh my God. That literally sounds like something from like Alice in Wonderland.
Yo.
Was she drink whatever made her big or small or fat or tall, whatever that was. That's what that sounds. Is that what happened? That sounds like.
You know, I don't really know because I swear I was playing Uno, but I wasn't playing Uno. Like, I looked up, I was like, man, I really got to pick up this draw four. They was playing spades. I said, wow.
Oh, my God.
I said, wow.
Your 2 years was lit. Okay, listen.
Yeah, but then it was like an hour and I got together.
Don't compete where, you know, you can't compare. Okay. Well, happy New Year. I'm glad you're here, that you made it.
Oh yes, you know, I'm blessed, you know, as a court collector and also on a connoisseur of the finest strains, I will survive, you know what I'm saying? Like, I got to make it through here, you know, we got to make it to 2018 somehow. Well, we made it to 2017, so it's all possible. You have any resolutions?
Okay, so I had to take some time. It took me a couple days because first, you know, you're supposed to go through and write your accomplishments. So I had to make a list of all the accomplishments so then I could make my goals based off of, you know, building on the things that I accomplished or what I hadn't. So then, you know, so they're SMART goals. You know, I remember making SMART goals?
Yeah, specific, like measurable, attainable. Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, can't I just write exercise more? But they're like, you got to have a time step, whatever. So I had to go in and make resolutions that felt even semi close to being accomplished in a year. So I have a couple. I was trying to get to 10, but I got a strong 7. So I think that stuff on here, doing some community service. I read some articles about like creating like achievable resolutions or goals. Like don't set stuff that you think you'll be done with. Like most people in like the first or second month of the new year, like do something that you know you can implement at any point in the year. So one of them on here is like doing more communal meals. So a big thing for like me and my friends, we like to, you know, when it gets to the end of the month and we didn't pay rent and all that stuff, instead of like buying a bunch of food for our own groceries, we'll buy like enough ingredients to make one large dish, and then we'll either have a communal meal and all take leftovers from that and have a Sunday dinner or a Friday night dinner or like Sunday night meal planning, and we'll all bring one thing that we can make multiple meals for the week for and have dinner together as friends. And so I put on my goals that I want to do more communal meals but with like larger groups of people to like eat better and, you know, implement the whole community fellowship thing. So that was a kind of a out of the ordinary.
That's so dope. That
it's something I could actually accomplish. I was like, sure, who doesn't want to eat and get free food and milk?
I'm saying.
And then it seems easy enough. But we'll listen now, Matt. We'll see.
At least your intention is there. The intention is there. So it matters.
I wrote it down and they said that's the first step. Don't type it up or whatever. The first thing you should do is write it down so it's written. Now, is it ever going to get looked at again?
You know how that goes. I'm like, you know, maybe I woke up and I didn't feel like reading.
No. But yeah, what about you? Did you make goals or resolutions?
Well, I made resolutions. I'd say I made most of my resolutions like 5 months ago, actually. And it wasn't because I'm like, I'm looking ahead into the future and shit. Like, no, I knew that, like, since I graduated, I was going to be, like, real, like, lit. And then also, I was going to be on some bullshit. And so, I was like, okay, now I need to be prepared for when I'm on my bullshit. So, when the time comes along,
right,
I can, you know, I know exactly what I'm going to do. So I had to set resolutions as far as being more active and like attentive in like the people around me's lives. Like sometimes I tend to like be by myself a lot, and you know, just this is a lot of stuff goes on for me, and I'm just trying to find a way to connect more with people, and also just like keep these relationships going and nurture them, and just find ways to maintain and also establish mutually beneficial relationships in my life. And also something else I wanted to do is I wanted to do more like marketing. Like I wanted to get more out there and put my name out there and what I do and just really put the work in, because last year I said 2017 was about the work, and I'm saying it again, like 2018 is really about the work. Like, because I'm thinking in my head, like, all right, 5 years, what do I want in 5 years? Like, I'm not really sure at this moment, but I know whatever I'm doing right now, if I keep putting in the same amount of work, but adding more details to it as time goes on with my experiences, in 5 years, I can have something, even though I may not know exactly what it is, but it's something that I already have established, or I'm just going with the flow of things, but I'm still creating something. I'm still working on something. I just still want to, because I don't know what I want to do per se, but I know what I don't want to do. So I'm going to do what I want to do, so I don't have to do what I don't want to do.
And I think something that a lot of people forget is the importance of like laying a solid foundation and building on top. A lot of people just want to jump right into their 5-year plan or their 10-year plan, and they think that doing a lot of work on like one goal or one in one area is going to bring them like well-rounded success. And that's not always the case. Sometimes there needs to be, you know, time being spent on building that strong foundation, basically, like you're talking about, so that when you are looking to just focus on one area, you already have a foundation built that you can like fall back on, or that you can add other things to, instead of kind of just getting really, really like mastering one area or one like lane, and then, you know, getting down that path or getting to the end of that 5 years and realizing like, oh shit, like this is not what I want, or this is not exactly what I thought 5 years ago this was going to turn into, and now I have like nothing to go back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because life is a static experience, it's a dynamic experience. And so when people, we have such a like set path going on, sometimes we don't pay attention. Like maybe I don't like the roses or the trees along this path. Like, or maybe I don't like the way these stones are set up. Like you don't always forget that you can really go back. Like if you don't like the way your path is set up, you can always take another one. Like your life is not just a set experience. So like that's the dangerous thing that kind of worried me about a 5-year plan, because I was always so afraid about, okay, what if I change? And as I go along this way, and I will change, and as I grow and I make different decisions, and maybe some of my responsibilities change and what I feel accountable for changes, and then I have to make a shift, and then I turn around and I look and I'm unhappy. Because as you notice that with a lot of people who are like on a big track to fame or success, they might find themselves being absolutely unhappy because it's not really what they wanted. Like, you know, and they find out it's not valuable. Like you ever hear Rich Forever by Rick Ross? Oh, so he was talking, they had an interview with Mike Tyson, and he was like, you got all these belts on here and all this stuff here. He was like, this is history, like, this is garbage. And, you know, I fought in that blessedness and I died. And he was like, and, you know, and it doesn't matter. He was like, it matters when you were young and you were a small kid, but now, you know, I'm older and I just want my kids to be happy. And you know what I'm saying? He's happy now when he doesn't have all these things, but, like, you couldn't tell Mike, you know what I'm saying, in 80s and 90s that that wasn't going to make him happy. You know, like, but you know you aren't happy. So you just have to find that your happiness is always changing, and that what you want will always change, because, I mean, your joy stays the same. Like, the base of your joy is supposed to stay the same, but what makes you happy shifts, like, consistently.
Yeah. I think it's also just to, like, hold you to that, like, happiness is just realizing, like, the why behind what you're doing, like, why you're doing what you're doing. If you can hold on to that, like, you know, like I'm doing this because I want to serve people, or I'm doing this because I want to make a better life for people who've come or coming after me, or I want to like pave a way for somebody else. If you hold on to that why, it can appear in that 5-year plan in different ways, you know, like it can take different paths, but it can, if you come back to that why at all points, you'll never really be too far from what makes you happy, because you can always reaffirm that with like why you're doing this.
And then also, if you don't have a, like a specific why, having a value, like understanding your values also can help you be flexible and finding your own happiness. So I'm glad you really talked about the why, because I remember I was talking to another trainer about keeping clients motivated and finding which clients really want and which clients really don't. And I always tell people, mm-hmm. like, look, if you're going to get into working out and training, I feel like it's better that you have a feeling of what you want and not an image of what you want. Because an image will always mm-hmm. betray you. An aesthetic will always yep. betray you. I was like, but a feeling is something that you can't shake, you can't change. Like, you know when you feel fear. Like, you know when you feel love. Like, mm-hmm. you know when you feel angry. Those are things that can't betray you because you know what they are. These are things that are just inherently going on. Like, these are nerves. Like, these are really, like, nerves and, like, psychological things going on with you. Yep. So I was saying, for, like, older people, I would hear older people who are getting healthy say, well, I want to be able to play with my grandkids. That's a feeling. Like, you know what I'm saying? Even though you can't really take a picture of that and see that really at this moment, you know, but you can feel it. You can feel like, wow, I'm actually chasing after my grandchild who took the flower, who took the, you know, the flowers out the pot and got the dirt running everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's those type of things that are sustainable, right. Like those whys and those feelings and those values. Like, mm-hmm. for me, I know I value independence and I know I value creativity. So I know whatever I'll do, as long as I follow those value systems that I have for independence and creativity, it won't have me straying too far from the path to the point where I wake up and I find myself unhappy because I didn't put my joy first. Happy. Oh, also, I did have two more other resolutions that I really want to try. Like, one of them depends on, like, finances, and that's because I want to do I want to do Pana Tukan Filipino Dirty Boxing. And yeah, I met some.
You're gonna have to
okay,
explain.
So I have some like martial arts background, like Taekwondo and like Muay Thai.
Okay.
And so I never finished. And that was my problem. I just never got a chance to finish things. Because I had to go back to school, or you know, there was something that would just change along the line. But now that I'm older and I might have, you know, more consistent income and be in control of, you know, my time and my space, I wanted to really learn it because I met the guys down at the Eastern Market and I saw they had the martial arts pamphlets on the table and they had like these weapons. And they weren't like traditional weapons. Like, I didn't see like just, oh, they had nunchucks and there was a katana and a sadachi or whatever. But it was like, they just had like broadswords and different types of weapons I've never seen before. And I was like, yo, what's this? And he told me like, it's a Filipino dirty boxing. And we teach that, and they also teach a couple other styles there, and they teach Jeet Kune Do concepts, Bruce Lee's martial arts style. And so, and they told me, like, yeah, you know, come on through and come and learn, you know, have fun. So I was looking it up on the internet, and I was looking at the fighting style, and I was doing, like, my information, that background of it. And if you ever seen the Jason Bourne movies, that's the fighting style he uses in the Jason Bourne movies. And I was like, wow, I didn't know that. I was like, I didn't know that, but I kind of want to learn jiu-jitsu more. So I'm trying to balance it out. Like, I do want to learn. I want to have a balance between like striker and grappling. Like, I don't want to be like a fighting nigga or nothing. But you know, you never know when you might have to drag somebody through the street. So you never really know. The other one, I need to finish learning Spanish. I need to use Spanish more in my daily life because I've been learning Spanish since I was in kindergarten. Then I was in college taking Spanish, and I was like, man, it's no reason. Number one, I can speak Spanish, I can write Spanish, I can, you know, I can hear it and, you know, understand things, but I don't implement it as much as I used to. And if I don't implement it, then I'll lose it. And as the world is changing and our country is changing, and I have a lot of like Latino folks around and I'm cool with, like, you know, I just like to be able to speak Spanish and things, and so just speak a different language and maybe even go further and learn other languages just to communicate with people, you know. So I feel like I wouldn't want to waste something that was already kind of instilled in my brain. So I might as well use it and exercise it while I can.
Yeah, you should try. Have you heard of that? It's a phone app. You can use it online too. But
yeah, I have heard of Duolingo. I need to download. Actually, I was gonna download it. I have a book too, that because I have my all my Spanish from college. But I was in the School of Communication, so
yeah,
that's all. You know what I'm saying? I was taking Spanish in 10th and 2010, 2020. Like, I was supposed to study abroad, and I didn't get a chance to. I was low-key sick.
Okay, listen, you can, I mean, now solidify those Spanish skills because you're going to get over there and all you're going to be able to order is rice. But, like, you can still get over over there and all you know how to say is I rose.
And pojo. 6 months. I don't know pojo. 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 Like, that's all I'm going to know.
Pojo, polo, whatever. You have chicken and rice every day.
Every day. I'm going to be lean as hell.
You'll be sick.
Oh, my God. But we got so much going on in, you know, New Year 2018. Oh, tell me your top five. What's the highlights that you've seen in popular culture in 2017? Because I have a top five, and I like to hear your top five. They don't have to be good. They just have to be big.
Oh, no. Wait, top five in?
2017. Top five moments. Yep.
Oh, my top five moments or top five moments like that yours, we have seen?
Yours top five in 2017 that you've seen that was just dope. They could be about the culture. They can be like anything that's going on.
Okay, so they're not in order because whatever, I don't care. But Issa Rae, she's just a category all of her own. The shows, the culture, everything, whatever. She gets to be in my top five, Issa Rae. Let's see. She just gets a category of her own. You take it however you want to, whether it's Insecure or what she's doing, like, for modeling or what she's just doing in like, she's just amazing. And it's her, the natural hairstyles and seeing my entire life be portrayed on a television show. Sit around and have, you know, and we love Shonda Rhimes and what she's doing, but to have a show with just so many brown women do at the exact point, at the same exact point that I am in my life, and to sit with like my friends and my sores and just like watch her, like the things that she's doing in her show, and just be able to like identify so much with her. She has done more for like millennial black women that I think that she really fully understands and realizes. And I don't know, I get the whole like representation matters now, because just being able to like laugh and cry and celebrate with her on some fictional ass TV show is just everything. So Issa Rae. What what else? I would probably say what else has happened?
I know it's been such. We get so much information consistently that it's hard for us to like point out things.
Process. I haven't even, and you're a good one because I haven't even stopped to think about what mine are. So in Columbus, Ohio, when Trump first got elected, because I'm living in Columbus, I'm working for an education nonprofit out there. But when Trump got first elected into office, he started all the rhetoric about building the wall, and people were freaking out, and he was talking about it was the immigrant ban. And I went to a protest at the Capitol building, the state Capitol building, because Columbus is the capital. And I went to a protest, and we like marched in the street like protesting Trump and this ban and all this racist language, and just, I don't know, there were so many people of color and like white people and women and men, and people had their, that to me was a really, really powerful moment. And it was like the first time, because I had marched around like BG when Lush happened, I would go to like protests and stuff like that and silent protests and all that stuff, but I had never been to one of that magnitude. I had gone to the Million Man March on the 20th anniversary, so I had marched with a large group of people, but never in protest or something. And to just be like, I don't know, it was just really, really powerful to see, unfortunately, for the reasons, but it was really, really powerful to like see so many people like come together that all kind of felt the same way that me and the group that I was with about like Donald Trump and what he was trying to do in the country. So that was really cool. That's two.
Okay, we can go back and forth. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You give one, because that jogged my memory.
Okay.
I'm gonna get on Facebook. I can't do anything without social media. I'm like, what happened in my life? God, it's been 365 days.
Has 500 years later.
Hey, God, I've done nothing.
Oh, but man.
But you go. What's your time?
Yo, didn't Charlie Murphy die this year?
Oh, my God. He did. I mean, I wouldn't count that as top 5.
I'm not saying top 5, but my heart is broken right now.
Oh, no.
I think that was the year before last. Maybe? I think it may have been a year before last. Oh, one of my top 5. Okay. That did make me so sad. Like, oh my gosh, my heart is crushed. I want to go home, man. Okay, my top 5 moments. Okay, one of them has to be Get Out.
Yeah.
And let me be clear. I just seen Get Out like 2 weeks ago. And yeah. I can't sit still very long. And at the same,
I know,
but it's my fault. It's really my fault. I don't know what was going on, but time just slipped away from me. And I was like, wow, I did not see this movie. So everybody was making these references, and I was just laughing. I don't know what's going on. I was like, a sunken what? I said, black people can't swim. I was like, what you mean, a sunken place? I was like, what's going on?
I hope everybody is judging you right now for
I'm fine with that. Anyway, I'm fine with that. Judge me. Okay, you can hate me now, but I really enjoyed the movie. I thought that I wasn't really scared at all during the movie. For me personally, I was thinking, number one, I said, look, okay, if her mama don't make collard greens, I ain't gonna date her. That's how I live. So I was like, I wouldn't.
If she can't use my
phone, if you need to enter directions to the biker shuffle or the cupid shuffle to do it, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
No. Ooh, nobody has time.
Not at all.
Nobody,
you know what I mean? Like, and so I'm like, well, this ain't gonna happen to me. So I was enjoying the movie. I'm like, I said, cuz should have been killed the brother, dog. I was like, I don't know. Cause when he came up on me on that wild stuff at the kitchen, I was like, nah, bro, like it's, I would have been in his room like Monique on Precious. Like, so if you thought you was a real bitch for that shit you put in the kitchen, Precious, you gonna come over here and ask me about fighting, okay? And you gonna bring that all up in my house, okay? Was like, you gonna try me again and I'm gonna knock you the fuck out. So I'll have to say Get Out was great because it was a movie, it was a black movie that all of us got to really like talk about, and it wasn't like a remake of Friday. Okay, like I'm so tired of all our movies, black movies being remakes of stuff. So sick of it. I'm so.
What are you
talking
about? Give me an example.
So everybody was like, okay, I want an ATL. We had something to look forward to, like as a black movie. So people always want, like, okay, we want an ATL 2, a Friday 2. They talk about another How High. Like they always talk about these old movies coming out with sequels. That's what they always anticipating about, like, oh, another Madea, you know, Madea walks to the store. You know what I'm saying? So Spike Lee is going to drop an awkward film about a place he knows nothing about and make a generalization on how to handle the violence. Okay. Like, you know, it wasn't like, it was somebody fresh. It was somebody young making something. I mean, he was seasoned. Like, you know, like a lot of people don't know how much work he's really put into the industry as a writer and, you know, as a producer. And I can really respect that in Jordan Peele. And so I just thought that was really dope to see. It was just so dope to see black people really going crazy. And I got my next two. Tiffany Haddish. Number one, you gonna judge me because I haven't seen Girls Trip. I don't see any movies. Like when I tell you I still haven't seen Star Wars, and I am one of the largest Star Wars fans. I'm so deep into Star Wars, I know the mythos, okay? I am deep. Like, I know what was going on before the Jedi.
Oh, Lord. Now I will say the Girls Trip, that's fine, because, you know, we gonna see it eventually. But Star Wars, don't miss this trip.
I do. I need to go see it. I was on some trash, but I would have to say Tiffany Haddish, because number one, I love her, because I seen her comedy at the Laugh Factory when I was watching it, and I just thought she was so funny. And I was like, dog, and I love her. She's so, like, she's so cool. She's like, and I just be successing in everything. She say success oatmeal, success coffee, success. Like, I just love her so much. And, like, I don't know. I just want her to win. And I'll have to say three would be Cardi B for sure. Because Cardi B has been going ballistic. Like, and it makes, yeah. And it makes no sense. Even though I can kind of see the fall. But...
You can kind of see the what? No.
Because people are too fickle. I already see people like trying to like tear Cardi down, who already like around her was all past. So it's just like a very, it's, as you get bigger, your shadow gets a little more exposed. Like, you know, people out here trying to, like, even though she was already said she was a stripper, people already trying to try videos on her and expose her and do like, you know, all this mess about her. Like, so I can see, like, I can see the internet, because Cardi B has so much fame off the internet. It wasn't like, you heard Cardi B on the radio, or she was an actress on television, and she just got bigger and bigger and bigger. Like, she doesn't have that same, like, backing. Like, okay, I was on this, I was on that. Like, you were on the internet, and the internet is changing right now because of net neutrality. And also, the internet is changing because people always change on the internet, because they love you one minute, and they will rip you to shreds in a heartbeat. They will rip you to shreds. Mm-hmm. Remember, everybody loved Keisha Cole when she said something about Beyonce, and they done tore Keisha Cole apart like Keisha Cole won't slice nobody. I'm like, I don't know why y'all keep trying Keisha Cole.
But listen, Keisha Cole tried us. That's what she did. She tried us, and she knows where not to step. And she stepped over that line, and the beehive just
goodness gracious. Her.
And I was like, no, you shouldn't have said. She wasn't a bee, but she should have prepared. She knew. She knew when them words left her, when them fingers typed out the words, when the words left her, that she was in for it. Because you said, remember when everybody came in?
She wasn't a hood chick. Okay. Like, Keisha Cole wasn't every girl in a baby fat coat when you was in middle school. Okay.
Like, combined all. She said, oh, I got you. Checking.
And also, DeRay, when you saw DeRay get torn apart on the internet, when people were like, what? People will turn on you in a heartbeat.
Did see that. Now, that one confuses me, though, because I get that people feel like he's the I don't know how to describe it. People think he's the fluffy activist. He's a social media activist. And not really a grassroots one. Because you're talking about DeRay, the civil rights act. they're like, you call him the best one. Yeah. Blue vest. But they, people are always like, oh, you know, he only protests on social media, or he's never really out there with the people anymore. He's kind of lost that. And so I get where they're coming from, but I'm also like, you don't know his life. Social media protesting is another form all of its own. Big and bold behind keyboards, that's protest too. Having to deal with
Saying, because information got to get transferred somehow. And if he's good at putting information out where people can grasp it and easily understand it and know exactly what's going on, then that's dope. Like, it changes. What we need to do changes. Like, as a people, like how we approach things needs to change.
That comes at every, we need people at every corner of the battle that comes our way on the daily. So if he does something weird, then we can, you know, all come for him. But the internet, Twitter was not, Black Twitter was
all. That's how I know you've been in Columbus, because you said wig.
And I work in a high school.
So oh, yes. Yeah, super.
Day. I'm like a child. I'm just like, what? That's cool. They're like, yeah. I'm like, all right. But poor DeRay. Okay, so
that's three. I'm at three. You got three. You got your third one.
Okay. So I want to add that Colin Kaepernick won GQ Citizen of the Year, and that was everything to me. I don't know why that. I just looked at that. I bought a copy of it just because. I just liked him and his fro and that black turtleneck. He looked like a panther. And I read that article like 3 or 4 times, watched all the videos, all the interviews, and the things that he's doing for, in terms of like sports protests and with the NFL. I love that. Like that's what I was saying about having people that are in at every corner of the battle that we're facing, because it's coming from every which way possible. So I like that we're kind of covering, we're getting to covering all the bases that has to do with like police brutality and race, like injustices and discrimination stuff. So Colin Kaepernick definitely is like on my top five moments of the year, but definitely him winning GQ Citizen of the Year, that just made my heart happy. And then I decided to add, for all we were talking, Black Twitter. Because they deserve an award all on their own for the memes, the gifs, the drags,
the threads,
the photo. Twitter, I mean, like, really, if you watch, Twitter is like acclimating based off of basically what Black Twitter is doing, because we're the ones that do.
We're the majority of Twitter.
I don't know what the other side.
We're the majority. You said of what? Twitter.
Oh yeah. I was like, honestly, like, I know I've never been to translucent Twitter, but like, I guarantee they're not, you know, writing threads and putting hair care tips and stuff. They don't do that kind of stuff, you know. Facebook.
Like, we're building community.
But yeah, like, Black Twitter is basically a community all on its own, and it's something that you can't easily get access to. You have to kind of, I mean, people have created their own Black Twitter communities and stuff like that, but you can always access the larger community, whether it's through a meme or like a hashtag that we are all talking like that. Like, we really do have a community within a large, like a small community within a larger one, and Black Twitter just, they get an award this year because they've made me laugh, they've made me cry, they've made my curl pattern form more better, and I just love it. I love
Black Twitter is amazing.
So that's
like,
it,
oh
really
my
is.
God.
I don't ever want to. I might debate whether or not I would pay the $30 a tweet to still be a part of Black Twitter.
You know, I've been considering it because, look, Chef Twitter is the Black Chef Twitter is the best. Like, thing that ever happened to me, okay? My TL is so much food. It's so much food on my TL consistently, where I'm looking at new recipes and archiving new recipes. Like, oh, I'm gonna make this next time. I'm gonna make that next time. Like, I'm literally like in heaven. Like, I'm always consistently like looking at food and was like, I can't wait to make this. Like,
you
I can.
Be cook-
I love
you
it.
Be cook- that's I my. Love that's it. Matt. You and your cooking. You just first of all. You do two different things to me when I see that you've cooked. You shame me. You put me. You do. You shame me and probably a lot of other people because there's just no reason that it should come. It's just almost unfair how easily cooking comes to you. And I'm just looking down at my struggle spaghetti.
It's the first time I've made most of that stuff too. Like,
I don't. Don't do that.
Oh, but I study though, so it's different. Like, I study it in advance. Like, I literally, like, I look at the recipe over and over. Like, I have a process to make sure that I'm all set to go.
The potential there is just like, that is my food porn account. I'm just like, what is Matt making? What I don't know what he's doing. That is my top. Matt's food. You need to create a food porn page or some type of like food connoisseur Instagram or something, so I can just get on while I'm and pretend that that's what I'm eating as I eat my struggle spaghetti in my apartment.
You know, I'm actually, I have actual all like plans of doing that. Like, I have to get some licenses and some merchandise and some apparel in order real quick though. But besides that, like, I'm definitely gonna be doing something revolving around that. So I'm just gonna get more like involved with cooking. Like, I want to do personal cooking. Because I did a little bit of it last year. Mm-hmm. It's so funny to say last year like it wasn't yesterday. But
right.
I did some of it last year. And I really enjoyed it. So I enjoyed personal, because I didn't want to like cook in mass doses. Because like, when I saw Dink doing trigger meals, and I was like, and I saw him doing that, and I was like, hell no. I want a whole bunch of people hitting me up telling me, you know, I want this, I want that, I want it spaced out. I don't get to make an intimate experience. Like, I wanted to give an experience, you know, with cooking and things like that. So I wanted the, you know, music to be played. I want the house to smell nice. Like, I want the, like, the food to look nice. Like, I really wanted to, like, arrange something. I wanted to sell an experience instead of just, like, a product. Because my food tastes well. But I wanted to, like, mm-hmm. I wanted to, like, trigger a memory. Like, I want foods to, like, trigger a memory or sense or trigger a memory, and I want it to be positive. So I want people to like have that, so the next time they try that food, they'll associate it with like a positive memory. And so I've been trying to figure that out. And yeah, as far as cooking goes, I got too far into that. But as far as cooking goes, I got a lot going on. So it's gonna be some things coming. I want to work with some more seafood though, and just to get more into fine dining and just be a better cook, because I really enjoy this. I really love this shit. I really love this shit.
Seven streams of income.
I'm saying the bag.
Secure it with seven different bags. Secure them all. Listen, any avenue that you already have, continue down that path, because, you know, you're building a foundation. Even if it never picks up the ground, guess what? Your lady will always be happy.
I'm saying... Because she's been asking for a sweet potato pie, and I said, girl, you better stop, because we're going to have kids in 2018. You got to relax.
Oh, sad. Help us.
I said, you got to relax. I said, don't ask for no pie.
We're going to put you on PBS, right between Martha and Rachel. Matt.
Boy, I might even change my name to Martez Stewart, just so she know I'm mad ass. Okay. Like, I'm going to be gardening with Oprah, like. Oh, hell yeah. I'd be so lit. Me, Oprah, and Tiffany Haddish should be gardening. Okay. And I'd be like, damn, oh, you got them collard greens. They big as hell in the garden. Oh, how you get them collard greens like that? You know what I'm saying? Okay. And then me and Marshawn Lynch is chopping wood. It'd just be a different, you know, a different life.
Positive experience, well-rounded. That's what we're looking for in 2018. Attaching everything we do with a positive experience. Hey,
we got far into this new year. That's for sure. We got far into.
We really did.
Is it my turn? Or your turn? I feel like it's my turn. You done?
I'm done. I made my last year cooking.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So okay. Now I just have to do my last. Okay. Damn it! You just throw this on me. Yeah. But okay. Jeez. Who? Oh, so I said, I remember what I said. I have to say Marvel's Cinematic Universe. Oh my goodness. I'm really enjoying, and I say Marvel's Cinematic Universe because the comic universe is pissing me off. So, well, I'm not even going to open that can of worms. But I've been waiting for Thanos. Thanos is one of my, I love villains. Yeah. So I'm just waiting for Thanos. Like the whole time, like as soon as I saw Thanos in the first Avengers, I lost it. I said, yep. I said, yep, we need it. I said, we need it. Nope. I said, I'll be here. RSVP, I don't know how many years it takes. I'm going to be here for this. I said, I need it. I need to see it. I was like, I refuse. I need to see the universe be wiped out. I need it. And it's like 75% of the universe, not like all of it. He just like snaps his fingers and it's like.
Right, like I need to see him make a concerted effort. They need to make a movie.
They said that this won't be more of a Thanos movie than any other movie for an Infinity War, and I said thank you because that's what I need. Okay, I need Thanos' character to be built up. Like people don't build their characters up too much.
I'm trying to order this Black Panther costume.
Boy, kaboom.
Preparation. Listen. I'm fine. Listen, this year I decided, like, I'm going to go all out because am I excited? Yes. Am I going to pretend that I'm not as excited as I really am? No. Am I doing too much for my age? Yes.
Not at all. My like, how dare you? Like,
not. Hey, I know the kids. Why can't the kids do it and I can't? They make them in my size. Why else would they do
and
that?
And money is money. You know, the world work on money. As long as the money coming, they're not tripping.
Money. Okay.
So I said the Marvel Cinematic Universe is just going ballistic, and I'm really enjoying it because I can't wait for Black Panther. I can't wait for Infinity War. I'm just like, they're built up so much hype for the end, and I either want Iron Man to die or Captain America to retire. I either want Iron Man to die or Captain America to retire at the end of the movies, because when you think about it, Captain America, he played Human Torch in the first Fantastic Four. He's played two superheroes. I know he's tired of playing superheroes.
Yeah.
I would be.
He was who?
Chris.
Who's that actor?
Yeah, I think Chris Evans.
Is that Chris?
Yeah, Chris Evans. Okay. So I.
Yeah.
Chris
who was Chris Pine?
Chris
Pine.
It's too many Chris's.
Yeah, there's a couple, but Chris Evans is the one that played. Was he in the Fantastic Four too?
So he's tired. Yeah. I know he's tired of that. Like, and Robert Downey Jr., I'm tired of seeing like Iron Man pop up in movies all the time. Like, I'm Iron Man. I'm just going to be snarky and sarcastic. Like, okay, I get it. Like, come on, Robert Downey Jr. Like, he has a good career on his own anyway.
Oh, yeah. But the Iron Man movies I know have just catapulted him. And I'm like, dude, he's like, listen, I'm too rich for you to stop making movies about me. But I've had it. Like, enough is enough. Like, we get it. You're rich. You can throw money.
You have a suit. You make jokes and blow things up. Like, I got it. Like, so I have to say that Marvel Cinematic Universe has to be the fourth. And who I'm trying to get a fifth to? Who am I trying to give the fifth to? I might have to give the fifth to Instagram. Because Instagram is so entertaining. I am loving it. Okay, Instagram is because Twitter, you can't get lost in Twitter like you can't get lost in Instagram comments. Like, Twitter will only show you so much, and you keep scrolling it, and just like it gets too much. Instagram, no, it's a ton of comments, and certain people under their comments will respond to everybody in their comments, and it is absolutely ridiculous, and I love it. 50 Cent's Instagram is one of the best places on earth. It's hilarious. Because it's hilarious. It's low-key one of the top funniest Instagrams next to Snoop's. And it's hilarious because he will argue with people in his Instagram comments. Like, you would see 50 saying the most brutal things to people in his Instagram. He'd be like, fuck you. He's like, fuck you. When you die, your mom gonna be happy. Like, he'll say some wild shit. Yeah.
His PR, who have to stop arguing.
That's why they said why they love him. That's how he got on. If he didn't beef with John, nobody would have said nothing.
Okay, they like people. You're hurting people's feelings. They don't want to buy your work. You're insulting. They're gonna bring up that Instagram. You pay for the VIP backstage pass ticket, private meeting, or whatever, and bring up that screenshot of what he said on Instagram. Like, oh, I remember your comment. You remember talking?
He's too rich to care now. What? He's too rich to care now. He got that Stars deal. He got money. He don't care.
But you know, Will Smith joined.
It is lit. And Will Smith is using that like a pro. I bet you somebody, he got a team that sat down and taught him how to use Instagram effectively.
And talk.
Because he's funny. He's on it. He's strategic. But the thing about Will is, I'm not ever sure if that's actually Will. Like, I'm never fucking sure if that's actually Will Smith. Because I don't know. He seems like Will Smith, but I'm like, who are you, Willard? I need to know. Like, I feel like he's been like the consistent person, and even maybe since he's just been in the starlight for so long, he's just consistent and wild. And I love Will. I'm never going to talk bad on Will. I love Will Smith. I love Willard. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's something that made me go, something ain't right. Like, something ain't right. I need to know a little more. Like, I don't know. He got like a dungeon? Like, what's going on? Like, if the light is too bright, I'm always looking around for the shadows. Like, I'm like, nigga, something don't seem too right, bro. I'm like, is there him and Jay the Scientologist? Because I can believe it. I was like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I'm always looking around because, like, he just seemed too cool, man. Like, I would want to meet Will, but I would only want to meet Will for like 30 minutes. Like, because you don't want to be around people that you like too much, for like that you idolize too much for too long, like, because you're going to realize they're a dickhead. And you...
weird stuff.
Oh, my God. Because hear, like, weird stories from, like, women about, like, celebrity niggas that they would run into, and they would tell me shit, and I'd be like, damn. Mm-hmm. It's like,
damn, I can't.
Damn, I'm like.
Liked you before.
I'd be like, damn it, Mike Epps. Like, damn it, Rick Ross. I'm like, fuck, damn it, Danny Brown. I'd be mad as hell. Like, they would send me certain stories, and I'd be like, shit, now I gotta scratch this. I was like, damn it.
Like, And I like
bro,
you too.
Right? It's like, I liked you when you was from Philly, Lord. But you was acting like the African nigga. We know you're not African, Michael Blackson. We know you from Philly along with Meek Mill and Kevin Hart. I don't know what's going on. He's been calling niggas Mudasukas for 20 years. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. So I have to say Instagram has my fifth. And so I wanted to, since we got, you know, we talked about New Year's and what was going on, and we had a lot of, we really got into this shit today, but I wanted to talk about the Detroit Association of Women's Club. Can you tell me more about that? Tell the audience about it. Talk to us.
Yeah, cool. So, right. So the DAWC stands for the Detroit Association of Women's Clubs. It's an organization, a nonprofit organization that I've been working with. My family has been kind of working with for about maybe 15 years. So since I was like a little kid. So it's located here in Detroit. So I'm just going to give you Matt a little bit of history about the house. So in 1925, eight women's clubs around Detroit came together and decided to form the Detroit Association of Women's Clubs, the DAWC. So its legacy and its model is lifting as we climb, and kind of self-explanatory about what they do. They're of course, at all times working to uplift people in Detroit. They've been serving the community since like 1925, that year. So there's been about 93 years of uninterrupted like community service and community involvement, which is great. So in 1941, the DAWC was incorporated, and it purchased a clubhouse on the corner of Brush and Ferry. So the organization has been incorporated for about 77 years, and their clubhouse or the actual house is located at the corner of Brush and Ferry. And the home was built and owned by a man named William Lenine, who was working in a concrete and like cedar block business in the city. The home was built in 1913. So it's been around in the Detroit area for a long time. So in 1941, Dr. Rosa Lee Slade Gregg, who was the president of the DAWC at that time, they weren't in the house, was living in a duplex down the street from the Lenine house. And she approached Mr. Lenine about purchasing the home when he put it on the market for sale for $25,000. That's the part that always blows me. I'm like, $25,000? That's student loans, but whatever. I'm like, my God, a house like that? So that's a little bit about the house, but I want to give you all a little bit of, before I continue, get to see you some more information on Dr. Rosa Gregg. So she was a civic leader. She's born in 1904, and she was born in Georgia. So she's not originally from Detroit, Michigan, but she relocated pretty soon after college. So she's born in Georgia. She graduated summa cum laude from Morris Brown College in Atlanta, and she continued her education at Tuskegee and then moved to the Detroit area to do some further studies at Wayne State University and the University of Michigan. So she founded the Slade Gregg Academy of Practical Arts in 1947, and it was the first Black vocational school in Detroit. So it was known as the Tuskegee of the North, and it trained over 2,000 women and returning veterans. And it was the first Black-owned and operated business on Woodward Avenue in Detroit. She later led to the establishment of a youth center, library, and archives for Bethel AME, which is the second oldest Black church in Michigan, which I think a lot of people know a little bit about. So she really understood the needs of Black women, and she founded the building for the Detroit Association of Colored Women's Clubs. And she was able to have the Frederick Douglass Home in Washington, D.C. have the Frederick Douglass Home in Washington, D.C. declared a national shrine by Congress. So she's done a lot of things around the community, and you can find more information about her at the Detroit Public Library and just doing some like online research. I think she's in the Women's Hall of Fame. So she's done a lot of really awesome stuff. So this little Black woman came to this white man who was like living in this huge house, and kind of debated with him about him selling his house to her. And he, after some debate, he accepted her offer, and she spearheaded a fundraising campaign to purchase the house for the purpose of using it for the women's clubs for $25,000. She took out a second mortgage on her home, levered some of her personal property, and raised a down payment of $2,000. So, I mean, in 1925, that was like a lot of money, especially for a group of young Black women. So the club women paid off the mortgage on the house in 2.5 years. And it says, in comparison, the $2,000 down payment in 1941 would be $33,500 wow. today. But yeah, so yeah, it's pretty cool. So the interesting part of this story is, so back in Detroit, I mean, we all know how our city used to be. We know what it's like now. But back then, there were a lot of like housing restrictions, and there was some discrimination going on based on race in the housing market. So the women actually had to remove the front entrance of the house that was facing Ferry, facing, because it's at the corner of Rush and Ferry. So they removed the entrance of the house that faced Ferry and moved it to the side of the home. So yes, yeah, so that the other people on the block wouldn't have to watch Black women entering through the front door on Ferry where the other houses were lined. So if you've ever been down Brush, it's kind of it's a busy street now. I'm sure at some point that big road wasn't there, but that side street wasn't facing any houses. It was facing the sides of houses. So they didn't want to see Black women going in and out of the front door of this home. So they had her brick in. And if you go and visit the clubhouse or go on a historical tour or during Noel night, you can see where, you know, the front window panels used to be, where the front door used to be. And they've closed off the front porch and they completely bricked in where the front door used to be. And it's now on the side of the street that faces Brush. So the original address of the house was 326 East Ferry. But because the city of Detroit forced the women to change the entrance to the side of the house, the entrance then became 5461 Brush Street. So the house is probably, to our knowledge, is the only house in Detroit with two addresses. So,
if I typed in either the address for Siri, they'll pull it up and it'll be like, that's where it's like, you're going right here. Like, they'll be like, this is it. Like, same place. Wow.
Yep. I believe so. Because it wasn't so much like re-registering the house under a new address. It was more like having the house take on an additional address so that she wouldn't necessarily be associated with having a home on that street where a lot of prominent, you know, because the man was in coal and bricking in Detroit. And, you know, we were an industrial city. We were, you know, we were based on like our city received a lot of income and profit from like coal and doing things with like manufacturing and stuff. So it was a prominent area where she was buying this home, and they were like, they weren't having it, unfortunately. So yeah, I'm pretty sure if you put in either address, either 326 East Ferry or 5461 Brush Street, the house will come up. Now, I haven't looked at that in a little while, but I'm pretty sure that East Ferry address wasn't deactivated. So the club's still active 93 years later, and it's in the same location. The house has a historical marker from the state, and so it's a historical landmark in the city of Detroit, and they still have the door on the side entrance, and it faces out towards Brush, and it has beautiful curb appeal, and it's a three-story home that has most of the original woodwork and detailing in it, and it's being led by its 24th president. They still have an active membership with the clubs and an open house, and it's available for private group tours, group meetings, and rentals. So it's a really, really cool space. So every year, one of the ongoing projects that we do at the house is Meals on Wheels. And that's, I'm sure you heard of Meals on Wheels. I think everybody's heard of Meals on Wheels. But for like the longest time, I thought Meals on Wheels was literally just, because I started it when I was like 8 or 9, I thought something that my mom really? Had started. Like, yes, because so like every Christmas, every St. Patrick's Day, every Thanksgiving, on Valentine's Day, literally every holiday growing up, we went and gave out meals. And I was like, Mom, is this you? Is this your fault? Like, why do we have to keep doing this? Who needs a meal on Valentine's Day? And I'm thinking, like, why? Where are you getting these meals from? And why does every year on every holiday do we have to do this? Did you start this? And then later I thought, like, it was, like, a national organization and, like, a federally funded program and all this stuff. But for, like, at least 5 or 6 years, I thought it was literally my mom's fault that we had to wake up at 7 Christmas before we opened our presents and Thanksgiving before we ate to go, like,
this was just some enforced like tradition that you had. Like, this is like meditation before dawn for you. Like, you just had to like.
Oh yeah. No presents were open. No Thanksgiving dinner was had. There were no guests. Like, literally the first thing we do Christmas Eve, we would put on like pajamas and stuff and then be prepared to like wake up the next morning to not get up and like open gifts, but to go and unlock the clubhouse. And we have like 20 to 30 volunteers that come from the community. We have some regulars. We have some members of the club that come and like we distribute meals and addresses, and we do like a home delivery of hot and cold meals to aging populations around the Detroit area. So it's a really, really cool thing that's a really consistent program that we have. We have some other stuff. We're always a participant for Noel Night or a stop on Noel Night. So if you're Detroit native, you know that Noel Night is something big that we do during the winter holiday season. And the clubhouse is always a stop for that. But yeah, it's a really, really cool thing. So we have the 2018 calendar. We have like the, like our social media pages and stuff like that. But the reason that I really wanted to get on and tell you all about that, because we were talking before, Matt, that there's a lot of things that I'm seeing going on in the Detroit area that people are trying to do, either people our age or people younger than us, that they're trying to like get startups and programs, and this concept of pop-up shops has become really popular, but the people are running into the issue of not having the space to do some of the things that they want to do. And so being a person that's kind of grown up having this space and having this house, and I had my graduation party there and like prom photos and stuff like that were all there, I really want to kind of do some rebranding and restructuring and remarketing around what the clubhouse does, and kind of realign some of the missions and values with what people, young people in the community are doing now, and kind of garner some attention based off of that. So
that's so dope that you have something that has a long-standing history, and now you want to use it to continue its history through people who may not even be educated about its history, but can want to make their own history in the city. So I feel like that's so cool, especially because it's from a woman who came from Georgia. Like, I remember I went to a Too Short concert. And it wasn't just Too Short. Mm-hmm. It was like, who are there? Remy Ma was there. DMX was there. Beanie Siegel, Freeway. Like, Papoose was there. Okay. It was just like crazy people. I was literally lit, to be honest. But Too Short said something. He was like, man, Detroit and Atlanta, y'all pretty much just the same, because everybody in Detroit, y'all aunties is from Atlanta. And it was like, and y'all go down there every once in a while for a holiday, so y'all pretty much the same. They just don't got to deal with the cold like y'all do. I was like,
right.
Word. He's not lying, though, because I was like, dang. Because you think about the Great Migration and things, like, everybody, mama came here pretty much from, like, their grandma, everybody. Yeah, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia. It's real, and it's very real. And I think it's so sweet, because it continues and carries on. Like, imagine you got, you know, a young woman who comes up from Georgia, and, you know, she brings this thing to this new city. And then, like, for generations afterwards, the women who come up in these cities and the people who support them continue to, like, create more history. And so it's just, like, something behind it. Like, the house still stands. Like, the way the door is set up is still the way the door was set up then. Like, I feel like that's so cool, because history is so important in controlling our history. Is like very important. Like this story is like a very important story, and a lot of people really don't know that, because our history is often told like orally, and it usually gets washed away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, washed. True. But the tea yeah. on that is it's peppermint.
But yeah, I think that's part of the reason why I think it's so important for us to like see these things around our community, because we see a lot of our city and our community it's changing very quickly. Ownership is changing, intention is changing, the narrative of Detroit and its legacy is changing. And so we're seeing kind of these things, like you said, be either washed away or whitewashed or gentrified. And it's a really, really vital and important to our narrative, to our legacy, to hold on to the things and enrich the things that we already have established in the city and hold them to their original purpose and mission. And that's, I think, the most important thing about the clubhouse, that that they are continuously lifting with different programs. Now they've kind of, what we're trying to do is kind of garner some more use of it and bring some outside people in, because we've also realized that this is not a project or a task or a mission that we can complete on our own. Because they say, if you want to go far, go alone. But if you want to, you know, go farther, go together, or something like that. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. But like, realizing that in order to make this work, in order to keep it true to its purpose, we're going to have to do some things together. And that requires kind of shifting our perspective from what the house has traditionally been used for to what I'd like to say, what the kids want to do.
Listen to the kids, bro.
You know, right. You got to listen to the kids, man. I think sometimes the big fear is like these older establishments don't want to work with those population groups. But shoot, my mom is cool. So I know that there's, if young people are doing, and young women and men of color in the city are trying to do something, those are the ones that you do have to uplift. While we're all climbing this hill together, those are the ones that we want to see you doing podcasts out of our upstairs office. We want to see a pop-up shop downstairs in our lobby. We want to see you having church meetings and group meetings and workshops and discussions, presentations. Like, that's what brings life back into the house. Now, membership and monetary donations are always welcome, but like, that's what's going to bring ultimately the life back into the home and the clubhouse, and ultimately back into our city.
That's true. That's 100% true. Because I was thinking about a generational gap. And I say a lot of the generational gap really came from the war on drugs, where it turned out a lot of people being raised by their grandparents instead of like their parents. You know what I'm saying? So like, you had like those, it'd be like younger people in the family can't connect to the people closer to their age because a leg got swept up and locked up. And so now they're gone. Like, so now it's just you and somebody who's older and somebody who doesn't like, because maybe that person who was born, you know what I'm saying, around in the 80s and got active in the 80s, they might understand what's going on because, okay, hip-hop is kind of the same. Some of the concepts are still the same because a lot of the culture revolves around that. But when you have somebody that's older that can't really relate to that or understand that perspective at certain points, you have that disconnect. And that's when you have, like, older people, like, really afraid of, like, their own kids. Like, genuinely afraid of the children in, like, their city, like. And that's so crazy to me. That's so wild that you would see older people just like frightened by young folks, like terrified to even approach them and speak to them, because they're like, well, I remember somebody was talking about, they was using the comparison to Chief Keef. Like, if I saw a bunch of Chief Keefs, I'd be scared. Like, damn, man. Like, and this is like, I mean, number one, I'm scared of these niggas anyway, to be honest with you. So what I'm saying? Like, I'm just not the one you don't want to make nervous. But I'm just like, but I digress. And I was like, man, that's kind of wild. Like, that nobody was gonna reach out to him because they were scared of him, because he represented and came to the game at 16, and all he could have did is somebody could have reached out to him and, you know, put him under his wing and said, you know, it ain't no fear around here, because I feel like you can't really like make a loving community if it's like rooted in fear, because I feel like that's the opposite of it. Like, I feel like the opposite of like love isn't like hate, it's actually fear. And that's what just like, it just bothers me, and it makes me feel uncomfortable. So I think it's really cool that you have something longstanding that connects generations, that's willing and that is necessary, and its main function is to connect to new generations and for kids. So, you know, because I saw on Facebook, and I think I saw some of the Meals on Wheels pictures, and I was like, you know, that's dope. Like, I saw kids opening gifts. Like, it was a cool tree too. Like, I was like, it's a really cool tree. I was like, man, my mom ain't put up no tree this year. But I just thought it was like, so I think it's really dope and really necessary to have something long standing and also outreaching. I feel like that's definitely necessary for younger people, and I feel like it's very great for us at this point in time, because I feel more than ever at this moment we need to connect because we're becoming more successful. And as we become more successful, as our people become more educated, as we have access to more resources, as we start to have access to things within the system, or even creating things outside of the system that works for us, we need to be linked in and connected, because that success can sometimes separate us from our humanity, which I feel is our most important thing that we do have. And I feel like that's our gift, like, I feel like that was our gift. Like that was our trade away. Cause I remember it was talking about the movie Bright, right? And I haven't seen Bright. Have you seen Bright?
Yeah, I've seen it. You should watch
it. I do want I want to take some time to watch it, but I need to get Netflix again.
Find a Netflix login.
Man, I'm about use it. I'm about to use a new one. But but yeah, he was talking, this guy was telling me was like, well, they was like Bright is pretty much a what if situation if black people had gotten resources and access to things, and if everything was kind of even, would black people behave like how, you know, white people behave to black people? And I guess that was supposed to be like in relation to the orcs, but I haven't seen it, so I can't really make that situation. But what I argued was, I argued that as a people, because we've had to really take our time to kind of swallow our humanity in a lot of situations, like, you had to, you couldn't walk through the front door, you had to go through the side door. Like, how demeaning that is. You know, you're a human being. Like, you're someone who wants to be self-actualized. You're someone with pride. You're someone who wants to be recognized by their peers and those around them. But you won't. And that's just because of the color of your skin. I feel like us swallowing that kind of, like, humanity makes us be able to understand the humanity of others. Like, when you weren't considered a human being, you knew you were a human being. And not only did you know you were a human being the whole time, you understood that these other people were also people. Because I feel that makes us so empathetic and so, like, human of us. I feel like that's something that's just wonderful about us. And that's my biggest fear about losing as we progress and grow and as we maybe gain power as a people in terms of, like, political power or economic power. That was one of my main concerns, that we lost, that if we ever lose the soul and the heart of what our people really represent. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like that, and that house really reaches to that. It allows that to connect, so it stays there.
Yeah, because I mean, I think it's also important to understand how this connects to the importance of like leaving a legacy and building that foundation for the people that are going to come after you. Because it could have been so easy for her to be like, "I'm not doing this. I'm not living here. I'll move back to my condo back down the street. I don't have the time for this nonsense. You're making me break in a front door, block off.
I'm an educated woman.
I don't have to deal with this. I make enough. I bought the house. It's my house." She could have put up a fight that could have resulted in her winning and it being fine, but it could have resulted in the loss of her wealth, in the loss of the title over her home, over her property, the women's clubs. All of that could have been a legacy that would have been erased. Mm-hmm. And so I think that she understood that her and the women that she was with, much like Black people understand, that she wasn't doing that, sucking that up, sucking that pride up and that ego, and understanding that she was doing it because she understood that there was a bigger picture involved. And she was like, fine, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to acquiesce to what you're saying. And I'm going to do this because I know in the long run, someone will see this and someone in some down the line in history will appreciate the fact that, you know, this is still here and this is standing and what this means to Black women, you know, because there are not a lot of spaces around Detroit that are just specifically reserved for women's clubs and women's gathering and especially women of color. And to have something so sacred, I think that she understood that even in 1941, that like, I'm not doing this so I can live well, because it's not like she bought the house to live in. She bought it with a purpose in mind, with a mission in mind, that this is gonna be an opportunity for me to purchase this space, not just for the women that are meeting right now, but for women that are gonna be meeting in 90 years. You know?
That's amazing. And it takes us foresight to do that. Because we look now, we look back at our top five moments. Black women really are running our list. Black women are really running our list. Like, let's be honest. Let's keep it 100.
Oh, I know.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's the empowerment of it. That's like time, like over time, like Black women like are dominating more than ever now. Like, you have Serena Williams, who's the greatest tennis player of all time. You have Beyonce, who's the greatest entertainer of all time right now. Like, you have Cardi B, who's on fire. You have Rihanna. You have Tiffany Haddish, who's hilarious. You know, you have so many. You have Issa Rae. You have so many different people. You have Rhapsody, who's an amazing like rapper and MC, who got nominated for a Grammy among all these other male, this male-dominated spectrum of rap artists. Like, it's a ton of different things going on. And I feel like at this point of time, I feel like it's the perfect moment for the club to really like stand up and be like, okay, this is us now. We've been doing this for years and we want to continue to do this for years. But now everyone else recognizes how important that is in the city. And so you have that central hub. I feel like that's necessary where you can get certain like things out that people may need. You can do like drives. You can have, you know, all types of giveaways, educational centers, like self-defense classes, like political education things, like just a ton of different things for people, and just for women and people in Detroit to really gather and build and foster community. Because like you said earlier, that's definitely important. Having a space, like having a space is something that's very important. We never talk about how crucial and essential a space is to getting any type of work done.
A safe space, a place for you to be, you know, for people to, and a place that's been built on, you know, the backs of other women or other men, you know, that's to create more history on a foundation. That's, I mean, every time you even walk in there, you can feel that there's something beyond what we fully understand or like can comprehend that's already taken place. That's, you know, kind of laid the path for us to get there. But yeah, it's an amazing space. So I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to bring some youth back to it. So
yeah, like, let's do it. I'm down. Really, I would love to like do a whole bunch of things in there because I'm moving back. And so I would love to just really get into it and just start, you know, helping and knowing people who want to do things and feel like they don't have the space or they don't have the connections to do things. Like, I feel like that's definitely important. So I definitely would love to like work and like understand, like connect people. And so we can really do some things positive for the city because that's really important to me.
Yeah. So how do you want to do this? Should I give like social
media? Yeah, give your social media tags. Give any information or upcoming events that you know that's going on. And also remember to give the address. And if you can, maybe if you want to give the phone number.
Yeah. Okay. So the address is 5461 Brush Street. And that's in Detroit, Michigan. That's 48202. And the phone number is 313-873-1727. And then you can find us on Facebook at Friends of Historic Detroit Association of Women's Clubs. You can also find us on Twitter at Friends of DAWC. And like our page, that's also where you can find the calendar for, I'm going to give a couple of the events coming up months. Always find information on events that are happening. Be notified about when Meals on Wheels is going to take place. And if you're looking for volunteer opportunities around the community or you just want to get a private tour, that's a great place to find that information. We also, you can contact the president. Her name is Angela Calloway. She's really cool. And her phone number is 313-587-8978. And so we have a lot of things coming up in 2018. So January 15th, that's in a week or so, we have our MLK Jr. Community Service Day. So we have a day of service for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And you can call the clubhouse for the volunteer opportunities that will be going on for that. That same 873 phone number. And then March 24th, that's a Saturday, we'll have our fourth annual military tea for women veterans, and that's going to be at the International Institute. That's a place in Detroit, but it'll be hosted by the DAWC to honor some of our women's veterans. Sunday, April 1st, we have Easter Sunday Meals on Wheels, so we'll be meeting at the clubhouse on the 1st to distribute both meals and addresses to do home deliveries for Meals on Wheels around the Detroit metro area. And then May 12th, we have a Mother's Day tea. That's a Saturday. So it'll be a great time for people to enjoy spending some time with their mother and enjoying the clubhouse and just a midday tea. And I'm sure ticket sales will be going on for that. Information will be going out or be distributed probably through the social media page or if you call the clubhouse. And then Friday through Sunday, August 17th through the 19th, of course, is the African World Festival in Detroit. I'm not sure if the DAWC is a site for that or a stop, but I know that that's an event that's going on in the city. And then just looking ahead, Monday, September 3rd, We'll have Labor Day Meals on Wheels. So that'll be another day where you'll be able to come in early in the morning on our day off, because when we're serving in love, we never have a day off. And you'll be able to gather addresses and meals to distribute to our aging individuals in the Detroit area that are either shut-ins or cannot get out to get meals that day. So that's just a little bit of information. And of course, anything that gets added or taken out, all of that information can be found on our social media pages or by calling that phone number and contacting us. So you can also find both volunteer opportunities and rental space rental prices for the space by contacting a representative from the clubhouse. But all of the space is available. A calendar for any times and dates that you need could also be found by like contact by calling that phone number. So there's come one, come all. There's nothing really that we can't help you accomplish if you're looking to get the word out about something going on in Detroit, something that you want to host yourself or put on, an idea. If you just want to come and sit and have a meeting on a really fancy couch, that's also something that you can do. But the clubhouse is open and it's waiting, and history is definitely being made, and we want you all in Detroit to be a part of it. So
yeah. Wow, thank you so much for calling in. Thanks for giving so much information. If y'all listen thank to you. This on Anchor, I want y'all to applaud it. Give us an applause. I want to hear like, ah, like, because I had so much fun doing this. Like, oh, this is really.
Yeah. This is my first podcast.
Oh, you did so well. Like, you did really, really well. And you did very good. Like, clap it up for yourself. Clap it up for yourself. Yes. Yes. There we go. But, yeah, I really enjoyed doing this podcast. And if you guys are listening, remember to reach out to her and reach out to the club if you guys want any information. We got a lot going on, so this is going to be a big year. It's 2018. It's a splash. Yeah, it's a splash, and I'm waiting on Cardi B album. Let's see what's going to happen. Okay. Okay. All right. If y'all listening, thank y'all so much for listening. Peace, love, happy new year. Match.